This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Unit 5 High School choral music teacher Ben Lugenbuehl is an Illinois Teacher of the Year nominee, but even he has role models. His own social studies teacher, for instance.
He really challenged us to think outside of the corn and bean fields, to broaden our world and broaden our knowledge, and he was always telling us to raise the bar.
GLT's Mary Cullen talks about teachers connecting with students. Plus, Heartland Theater puts on Stella and Lou, about a warm, friendly place where everybody knows your name. So it's not clear how much they know about you inside. Laura Kennedy reports. And the city of Bloomington takes steps toward more affordable housing for seniors. Ryan Dunham chats with Mayor Terry Renner. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington aldermen have taken steps toward creating affordable housing for seniors. It also agreed to sell land to the Boys and Girls Club. GLT's Ryan Denham is in studio with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner.
The mayors of Bloomington Normal join us most Tuesdays after the regular and special council meetings. Mayor Renner, thanks for your time today on Sound Ideas.
Again, great to be here, Ryan.
The council last night approved rental assistance for this new senior apartment project on Washington Street in the former Bloomington High School building. City's already approved a tax increment financing district, or a TIF, of up to $1.3 million in property tax breaks for that area. Now also kicking in up to $228,000 to help lower rents in four of the 57 units that are going to be there. So what did you think of this rental assistance proposal?
I strongly support this, and it's really critical that we understand that affordable housing is a serious problem in our community, and this is one of many. Obviously, this particular project doesn't solve that problem, but it is one of many pieces that we're pursuing to try to make sure that all people have access to reasonable, affordable housing. Now, let me also explain why in this particular project. One is the TIF money that you're talking about is not coming out of our current revenues. This is revenue, up to $1.3 million is generated by the private investor and the money that they put into it. So if the private investor puts in, and if there are cost overruns and they have to put in $15 million, they don't get any extra money as opposed to $13 million or whatever. So that's money based on their future revenues, the increased property taxes in the future. The somewhere between $36,000 and $228,000 is what the city will commit to rental subsidies over a 10-year period. So that could be somewhere between roughly $3,000 in our budget and $20,000 a year on average in our budget over time. I think that is a small price to pay for this particular project. And it's not just about affordable housing. It's also a boost in economic development. It's not just a multi-million dollar project on the adjacent to downtown, but it also helps us link downtown to Greentop Grocery on the Washington Street corridor and, of course, the bike trail. So capital will attract even more capital. Obviously, we've been trying to sell the Coachman property that's inside this TIF as well as encourage other future investors. And, in fact, actually, I'm meeting later this week with one of those possible future investors. So this, I see it as win-win all around. It's primarily affordable housing, but it is also economic development.
When the city had already approved, as we talked about, the property tax breaks for this area through the TIF, and the developer was already getting low income and historic preservation tax credits, I think those are state and federal.
Correct.
So what's your sense of why those incentives on their own were not enough to make this project financially viable? Why this thing at the end still needed to kind of happen?
Sure, for a variety of reasons. The main cost is when you take an old building that is nearly 100 years old, there are always hidden costs. There are always things that you don't know are going to happen that do. It's also the case that the amount of money that you would put into an older building for historic preservation is a benefit to the community. I think it's critical for us to not bulldoze down the old Bloomington Junior High School. It's an incredible building. It's part of our historic past, and it can be part of our future. And so it's not unusual to have to take a look at a portfolio. This is vetted in a systematic process. We don't just come up willy-nilly with, you know, $36,000 or whatever the figure might be. You know, we have a clear formula for what it is that's acceptable, as do the federal government and state government. You know, people who are involved in issuing those grants.
So will there be others like it on the horizon? Are there more affordable housing projects that could be done with city support?
Yes. Now, are there immediately on the horizon? Don't hold your breath. I mean, they're going to come, but they're not necessarily coming in the next several weeks or the next couple of months. And also, we're also gearing up, you know, toward an era, you know, the time of the year where you're not really going to begin construction in December, January, February, et cetera. But we're constantly doing whatever we can to leverage all of our assets as effectively as possible to promote economic development and to do public good things like affordable housing.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. In other action last night, Bloomington City Council also approved selling some land on the west side to the Boys and Girls Club so they can build a new clubhouse at Sunnyside Park, selling that land to the club for $1. So, Mayor Renner, why did you think this particular proposal won such unanimous approval up there on the council?
Well, that's a good question about why it's unanimous, because the council is rarely unanimous on potentially controversial things. But I think this was a win-win. For everybody. The Boys and Girls Club is currently renting from the Bloomington Housing Authority its current facility. They have gotten money and grants to try to keep it together. The Housing Authority has been reluctant, or, and that's maybe putting it charitably, to put any money into the building. It's an embarrassment to our community. We do not have in Bloomington, with nearly 80,000 people, we do not have a recreation center. And yet we're the wealthiest community of our size in downstate Illinois. And we also should have recreation facilities on the east and west side that are at least roughly comparable and equal. That's not the case today. And that won't be the case with this, but this begins to reduce the inequity between the east and the west side. Again, nothing wrong with the east side. I live on the east side. I live not too far from a really, really nice park. But there are very few of those on the west side. And it's not just parks. It's also, in this case, recreation facilities. And it, given what the Boys and Girls Club does and its mission, it has great positive spillovers for at-risk youth and others to understand that they are part of our community, and they can become part of our community. And so they are mentored, especially if they're not perhaps mentored or if they've got a broken home life or other issues. So Boys and Girls Club is a great organization, and I strongly support this. The Sunnyside Park has been underutilized in many ways, although we have made improvements to it. Just about 2 years ago, there was nothing out there really. We had a basketball court that you could not really even play basketball on because it had potholes and whatever, and I think we've talked about this before. The water fountain hadn't worked in years. The only thing that you could do, as I've said before, in Sunnyside Park was drug deals. Now we have proper new equipment. You can play basketball, you can play baseball, you can do all kinds of things on that park. And we're also going to have, in a few years, a brand new Boys and Girls Club. And that money, of course, for building it is private money. So we are giving 3.34 acres to the Boys and Girls Club for $1 in order for them to use private money to build, frankly, a public recreation facility and to do public goods.
Well, speaking of that private money, I mean, it seems that so much of the development happening on the west side right now is being driven by nonprofits. The Boys and Girls Club, the Habitat Restore just a bit ago, the new West Bloomington Revitalization Project building. Do you hope that some of this leads to interest from businesses, retailers, grocery stores, that private companies might want to invest in this way too?
Yes, and there is actually some interest in terms of some private companies. Some are more serious than others. Some think that come in that we're going to massively subsidize businesses. Well, you know, if you're on the west side, that's certainly a targeted area, but we're not going to massively subsidize you. We will be very happy to work with you as a business person if you're going to put in, let's say, $2 million, and we rebate 10% of that, $200,000 of new revenues that are generated because of your investment. But we're not just going to hand you a check. And I think that that is one of the obstacles that some places may do that. In Bloomington, we don't. The other thing that I hope that it will do is to spur the city to put in more investment in the west side. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to go around to look at the recreation facilities in the west side and east side and compare them and realize who got the better end of the deal, right? And so that's really critical for our youth. It's critical for the future. It's critical for people of all ages to have really good recreation and quality of life amenities in a community. And it makes good economic sense.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Mayor Renner, I want to get your thoughts on a story we did earlier this week about a major overhaul that's underway to the city of Bloomington's zoning code. Essentially, the rules that govern, you know, who can do what and where they can do it, where you can put a parking lot or your beehives or whatever it may be. So how closely have you been following this process as it's been going through the Planning Commission, and what do you think so far?
Okay. Yeah, essentially, you know, I certainly have discussed this with Justin Boyd, who's the chair of the Planning Commission, and at this point, it's not really clear what the ultimate product is going to look like, but it does need to be re-examined in light of our comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan, the Bring It On Bloomington plan that began in 2014 and was approved in 2015. We want to move forward in terms of growth with infill and smart growth, not just sprawling. We see the cost of sprawling in terms of massive expenditures, $141 million on sewers, for example, and many other things, in additional fire stations or reduced 911 service times if you just keep sprawling. So we had a clear mandate from the 8,000 people, over 8,000 people were involved in the comprehensive plan to not sprawl, to try to grow in what planners often call infill, inside the city of Bloomington. And there are plenty of opportunities for that. So that necessarily means that we would need to re-examine and reanalyze our zoning code. I'd have to see ultimately what the product is. I certainly haven't had conversations within the individual zoning board commissioners. I have appointed them. My opinion is I appoint good people, and unless there's something really unusual, I let them do their job, and then we talk after they're finished.
Do you sense that the council is engaged with the process? My understanding is that a draft of all of these sections of the new code are already on the city's website, and the changes are sort of floating around out there, so that by the time it gets before the council, they're not going through it line by line, or something that has already been worked on for a couple of years.
Well, you'd have to ask the individual members of the city council how much they've gone through that, just as in any legislative body. Some are going to be far more engaged than others. But at the end of the day, I agree with you. I would hope that the council is following this closely and understanding what other communities have done. And that's the comparative reference that I constantly talk about. And that's why it's important to go to the Illinois Municipal League or the National League of Cities. What are other cities and communities doing who have gone through our process? We are not reinventing the wheel. So, again, I think in terms of the core answer to your question, I have spoken with, including Alderwoman Amelia Burgess last night, about all kinds of physical changes. But I haven't taken a poll of the city council, to decide who has read how much of this new proposed code.
Well, you start messing with what people can do on their own property. It can be a little bit controversial at times. Do you expect any part of this process, this zoning overhaul, to be controversial?
I would be shocked if it wasn't. Is exactly what you said. I've never heard of a zoning code overhaul by any mayor that I've ever spoken with, or any situation that did not have controversy. And even if the controversy is misplaced, sometimes there's the improper communication. So we want to make sure that there's as much proper communication as possible, so that people don't seem to think that, hey, we're trying to increase our power of eminent domain. And I had somebody ask me that. No, this has nothing, at least directly, to do with eminent domain at all. And we have not moved forward on the use of eminent domain. So we want to kind of try to nip the rumors in the bud. But I would be shocked if we revise the zoning code without some degree of acrimony.
That's Mayor Terry Renner. Thanks for your time today on Sound Ideas.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. Take care.
I'm Ryan Denham.
The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most Tuesdays after their regular and special council meetings. Next week, we'll be joined by Normal Mayor Chris Coos. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from Bloomington Parks Recreation and Cultural Arts, announcing registration is now open for their fall season of sports, education, and art programs for youth and adults. You can register for all programs plus special events at bloomingtonparks.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, Mary Cullen talks with an NCHS educator who is a Teacher of the Year nominee in Illinois. Governor Bruce Rauner is hoping voters give him a second term to pursue his so-called turnaround agenda, the same agenda that has put him at loggerheads with Democratic leaders in Springfield. As part of the GLT election coverage, we are bringing you some examples of how the candidates seeking high office in Illinois make their pitches to voters in their stump speeches. Rauner and his Democratic challenger, J.B. Pritzker, both traveled to Normal recently to appear separately but back-to-back at the Illinois Agricultural Legislative Roundtable Candidate Forum at Raider Farms. Rauner tells farmers he's got their back and that Pritzker's push for a progressive income tax would drive business out of the state.
I am so excited to be with you. You're the backbone of Illinois' prosperity. You're our foundation, and I'm all for you. You guys, many of you know, I come from a farm family, dairy farm. I never want to milk another cow in my life, but I was very proud of my grandparents. They were a Swedish immigrant family, lived in a little double-wide trailer, and they had dairy cows and corn. And my most fond memories of my life were growing up with my grandparents on that farm. The quality of life, the dedication, and my values, hard work, getting a good education, and giving back in the community, faith and family. That's my grandfather's my inspiration. He also helped me catch my first fish and taught me how to shoot a gun, and he was my best buddy growing up. And I'm very, very dedicated to farm families and farm life. It's been an honor for me and my wife to live in the governor's mansion in Springfield. It's been an honor to fix that place up because that belongs to you. That's the people's house. It belongs to the people of Illinois. And we're proud to have restored that without any taxpayer money at all. And now we're going to do the same thing for the fair and the fair for our farm families and the state fairgrounds in Springfield. We're going to make those beautiful and proud again over the next 18 months. We're very excited to do it. I'm here to talk about this election. I've lived in Illinois for 62 years, my entire life. I don't know of a more important election in my lifetime than this election. Everything is on the line. Everything for our future, for our children and our grandchildren is on the line in this election. It's a question of whether we're going to continue the process that I've just begun to turn our state around to become pro-growth, pro-taxpayer, pro-education, pro-good government, or we're going to slide back into what we had for years, corruption, self-dealing, high taxes, deficit spending, companies leaving the state. Are we going to go back to those days, or are we going to keep fighting and keep making progress of what we've been trying to do for these first 3 years and I'd like to do for the next 4 years? That's what's on the line. It's a fundamental, stark choice. Higher taxes and more corruption in the Chicago political machine and pushing jobs out, which is what Madigan and my challenger are really part of and really promoting. Or are we going to stay in a strong direction, pro-jobs, pro-growth, pro-taxpayer, pro-school quality, and pro-term limits and fair maps so we can have a government and a political process that works for the people? This is the most stark choice of any election that I can possibly think of. And that's why I'm all in. You guys know I'm not a politician. I didn't ever run for anything in my life before. But you know why I ran? Because my friends were all leaving Illinois. My friends, my neighbors, some of my business partners were leaving Illinois. And a lot of them said, Bruce, you should leave too. Come on with us. Move to Texas with us. Move to Tennessee with us. Move to Indiana with us. And I said, heck no. I'm not ever going to leave Illinois. This is home. And home's worth fighting for. I'm not going to ever leave here. I want to spend my last days. I hope I live a long time, but I want to live it all in Illinois. And I want all six of our kids to live in this state and have a great future here. And that's why I decided to run. Before I ran, I asked 17 men and women to run because this was not my life goal. I can tell you, this was never my plan. I didn't ever want to run for office. But I asked 17 men and women who I thought could win and to run before I did. They all said no. Too hard, invasive, abusive, expensive. And half of them said, Bruce, do what I'm doing. Change your residency to Florida. That made me a little upset. Not going to leave. Going to fight hard to make a better future for our children and our grandchildren. And that's all I care about. And you guys know I'm a volunteer. I'm not taking any compensation. And I am committed to restoring good government and a two-party system in this state so voters have choice and we have competition for ideas in this beautiful state. Because I love it. Look at this. This is the greatest place on God's earth, Illinois. And we're going to make it great again, a proud place for our children and our grandchildren. So I'm fighting to do several things. First and foremost, we've got to become a growth state. We've got to become a growth state. The fundamental issue is we got to get our economy growing faster than our government spending. We in Illinois have had government spending on a rocket ship, and we've had slow growth of our economy for decades. Unsustainable. That always leads to deficit spending. That always leads to higher taxes. Can't do that anymore. We got to get the economy competitive and growing fast, and we got to bring down the growth of government spending. It's simple math. This is not complicated. It's the number one issue that we're facing. I'll tell you little quick numbers. In the 12 years before I became governor, 12 years, we had one party rule. We had Madigan and two Democratic governors, Blagojevich and Quinn. On those 12 years, taxes went up dramatically, the income tax and property taxes. Deficits went up. Spending went up. And you know, in that whole 12 years, you know how many jobs we created in the state of Illinois? 60,000 jobs in the state of Illinois in 12 years. 60,000 jobs, 12 years. I became governor, fighting hard to reduce the government spending, fighting hard to cut the deficits, fighting hard to cut the regulations and the red tape on businesses. And I've been out there traveling around the nation and the world recruiting companies here and promoting Illinois investment. And I'm proud. We've added 210,000 jobs so far, 210,000 in 3.5 years. But I want to grow 4 times faster than that. In my second term, I want to add over 500,000 jobs into this state. I want us to be one of the fastest growing states in America. We do that. And we shrink the government spending, and we can have a balanced budget, we can have money for our schools, we can have money for our infrastructure, because we got to put a lot more money into our roads, our bridges, all the transportation network. That's the foundation of our prosperity. We're the transportation hub of America. We're the transportation hub of the world, and we need to invest more in our infrastructure. Education, infrastructure, balanced budgets, strong growth. Our kids are going to have an outstanding future in this great state. That's what I'm fighting to do. Balanced budgets, financial discipline, pension reform, Medicaid reform, bring efficiency into government. I don't think it'll stun you guys. When I first got into Springfield in the government, I went and visited every agency, went into every department, and said, hi, I'm the new kid in town. I'm here to work for you. My job is to help you do your job better. In every department, people generally would stand up and clap and say, this is great to see you, Governor. On probably 90% of the departments, somebody would stand up in the room and say, wow, I've worked for state government for 32 years. I've never seen a governor. I've worked for state government for 27 years. I've never seen a governor. I said, well, goodness, well, you know, who's in charge here? What's going on? My job is to work for you to help you do your job better. And I walked into one of the departments early on, 200 people in a room not too much bigger than this tent, 200 people at desk with paper and pen, not a computer in the room. Hello? You know, they invented computers a couple years ago. We could actually maybe do this a little more modern, a little more efficiently. Found out the math. Invest $500,000 in $480,000, to be precise, into digitizing that process of applications, and you can save $7 million a year. We're doing that again and again, all through the government, bringing efficiency and effectiveness to drive more value for taxpayers, drive up the productivity, drive down the cost. These are the changes that we're driving. It's hard work. Boy, is it hard work. When I started this job, I was 6'8 and had a full head of hair. This is really, really hard, really hard. But we're doing it. We're making progress. And in our second term, we got to continue that process and accelerate, get a lot more jobs. I'd like to get term limits done. I'd like to get fare maps done. I'd like to freeze local property taxes and then lower property taxes over time by giving you the option to control your communities how you see fit. Run your county the way you see fit. Run your city, your municipality the way you see fit. Get rid of the mandates from Springfield. Get rid of the unfunded mandates and the restrictions. If we do recommendations of my task force on consolidation and unfunded mandates, we'll save you $3.5 billion per year. $3.5 billion per year, taxpayer savings. That's a lot of money for infrastructure. That's a lot of money for schools. That's a lot of money for human services. We can do this. We do it together, we'll get the job done. Lower the taxes, roll back the income tax hike, cut the red tape, and we'll get Illinois booming just the way the federal government has done for the U.S. economy. The U.S. economy is strong. Illinois is doing fairly well because the federal government, the White House, and Congress has cut the tax burden, cut the red tape on businesses, fought unfair trade deals, fought against illegal immigration, and we're strong, and we're getting stronger. We need to do that exact same thing for the state of Illinois. Cut the red tape, cut the regulations, cut the taxes, become pro-business and pro-growth. We will have balanced budgets, and we'll be a strong, proud state again. That's what's on the line for this election. That's why it's so essential that we win, and that's why we will win. Now, I'm asking this election to be a pledge election. I want every candidate for the House of Representatives to sign a promise to you. Don't just talk about it. Sign a promise to the people of Illinois. What does that promise say? Two things. I promise to vote to put term limits on the ballot so you can vote term limits up or down, and I promise to vote for somebody other than Mike Madigan to be Speaker after 35 years. There's no reason one person has to stay in the same office for 35 years. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Even if you're a Democrat and want to vote for a Democrat, there's some honest Democrats in the House you could vote for to be Speaker. You don't have to have that same person loyal to Chicago rather than to Central Illinois or Southern Illinois. And we're going to hold people accountable. If they're going to run to represent you or the people of Decatur or the people of Moline or the people of Marion or Carbondale, sign the pledge. Don't work for a machine. Work for the people. Not a corrupt machine, work for the people of Illinois. And anybody who tells you that the right policy answer for the state of Illinois is to raise the income tax and put in a big graduated income tax, let me tell you something. Disaster. Not the answer. Total ticket for trouble. And they'll say, well, we'll just tax millionaires. Let's just tax the millionaires. Baloney. Business owners will flood out of this state. And you know who's going to pay the tax tab? The middle class is going to pay the tax tab. Every state that's put in a graduated income tax, the middle class has gotten socked in the jaw. And you can look what they pay in Minnesota. You can look what they pay in New Jersey. You can look what they pay in New York or Connecticut. Look at the tax rates in those states. Stunningly high. And I don't know if you guys got any buddies in New Jersey. I got buddies who live in New Jersey. No family, but I got friends. Ask them how it's going in New Jersey. They got high property taxes. They got really high graduated income tax. Can they balance their budget? No. Can they pay their pensions? No. Can they keep their people? No. It's us in New Jersey for out-migration. We can't tax our way to prosperity, ladies and gentlemen. We need to grow. The only answer is cut the taxes, cut the regulations, grow our way out of our challenges, and we will have a proud, strong, great state again. And the number one place we need to grow, the agriculture sector. We need you guys booming, and I'm all for you. I've been an advocate for agriculture my whole life. I'm in 100% for you. Virtually every bill that I've had an opportunity to push with you and for you, I push for agriculture. Your success is Illinois' success, and it's an honor for me to work for you. So I'm excited to be here. Please tell your friends, please tell your neighbors, get out and vote. Don't let anybody stay home. Get out and vote. Every vote matters. Sometimes we feel like, well, we're outnumbered. It's all up around Chicago. Let me tell you, every vote here means that we don't have to make up one out of Cook County. You heard the numbers. I want every county but Cook County. I still got 50% this thing. I mean, it's hard. Every vote here matters. You got to tell your friends, neighbors, family, get out and vote. This is the most important election of our lifetime. And I'm excited and I'm honored. I got to tell you, every place I go in the state, people come to me and say, Governor, stay strong. Don't back down. Don't give in. Stick to your guns. You're on the right track. A lot of times they go on and say, and I'm a Democrat. I don't even support Republicans normally. But I like what you're doing, and I know Madigan's a problem. And you're standing up to him, and you're fighting for what's right. I'll tell you, the single most emotional moment of my time as governor, working for you. And I've loved every minute of it. Not all of it's been easy. Some of it hadn't been fun. But I've loved every minute of it, because when you get a chance in life to improve the future for 12 and a half million people, I feel very humbled and honored by it. But I was shopping in Sangamon County in Springfield at a little grocery store called Schnucks. I don't know if you got those in Bloomington, but we got Schnucks in Springfield. And an elderly woman came up to me because she saw me down the aisle and started coming towards me. She wasn't moving real fast, but she was trucking on down. And I said, oh, hi. She came up to me slowly, and she grabbed me, both hands, on my left arm. And she looked up at me. And then she started to tear up. She started to cry. I thought, oh, no, what happened? Are you okay? Are you in pain? Should I get you? And she said, Governor, you're our last hope. Please don't give up. And I started to tear up, and I gave her a hug, and I said, I'll never give up. We'll never back down, because this is our home. We want to work together to make a better home for our children and our grandchildren. I gave her a hug, and I say, together, we'll make a better future for your family and my family and every family in this state. And that's what I'm honored and humbled to do. Thank you for the time today. God bless you. Let's have a better future for the state of Illinois. On to victory. Thanks very much, everybody. I appreciate it.
Tomorrow on Sound Ideas, you'll hear from Rauner's opponent, Democratic candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker. You can listen to all four stump speeches that we have in store for you, including the Attorney General candidates, and read recaps at WGLT.org.
Midterm elections are approaching, and with so much going on in the world, including your own world, it can be hard to stay caught up. Feeling out of the loop? All Things Considered has the news you need to know and the context you need to stay up to speed. Listen to All Things Considered to hear the bigger picture every afternoon from NPR News.
I'm All Things Considered host Mike McCurdy. There's also local news from 3 to 6 p.m. during All Things Considered on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from the Illinois Prairie Community Foundation, raising financial resources to increase the independence and dignity of women and girls in our community. More information about the Women to Women Giving Circle and more at ilprairiecf.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, kindred spirits seeking solace. It's not the bar. Cheers. It's a new drama from Heartland Theater. Laura Kennedy reports. This is choir teacher Ben Lugenbuehl, leading one of Normal Community High School's groups. The 21-year Unit 5 educator is one of the finalists for Illinois Teacher of the Year. That honor will be made public next month by the State Board of Education. In this interview with GLT's Mary Cullen, Lugenbuehl says music has always been in him.
So let's talk a little bit about your background, how you got into teaching. Why music? Just kind of take me through your journey.
I've always had music in me, and it's always been something that's been, it's a gift I've been given, and I just am thankful for it. The church I go to, we use a cappella hymns, and so the church, it's always just in your ears. Those of us who've grown up in that sort of worship, you hear the harmony, and I've always been thankful that I have this ear for harmony. And so it was just something that I always loved to do, and I started piano when I was 8 years old, I think. And it just took to it really quickly. And it was just, music became a passion for me. And so as a fifth grader, I got involved in the Peoria Youth Chorus and sang in that until my voice changed. And then just sang through junior high and high school and did all state honors and all those kinds of things like that. And I remember my freshman year of high school, I realized that being a music teacher just sounded really awesome. And so, and I'm also, I was always involved in leadership things in 4-H and student council and stuff like that. So it just seemed really like a natural fit for me. And I've always told my students, I'm a very rare person, and that I knew when I was 14 that this is the job I wanted to do. And I have loved it all those years and through college and everything. So it's just been a huge blessing because it almost sometimes doesn't feel like work because it's so much fun.
So when you were growing up, did you have any role models that you looked up to that kind of brought you to the teacher that you are today?
The music teachers I had were really great, but the teacher that stands out to me the most was my social studies teacher in high school, Mr. Suter. I grew up in Roanoke Benson High School, great little community, and loved being from there and growing up there. He really challenged us to think outside of the corn and bean fields, as he always said. He said, think outside of the corn and bean fields of Central Illinois, and would challenge us to broaden our world and broaden our knowledge. And he was always telling us to raise the bar and to dig deeper into what we knew. And he challenged our thinking. And I just feel like it just really inspired me to go to his class every day. And I learned a ton from him. And it wasn't always from a textbook. So it was... He really inspired me, and he's still a mentor to me today, and I really enjoy being able to talk to him anytime, and it's been neat to see how I've been able to take what he taught me when I was in high school and that how I can make that into my teaching too.
Your students here, they sing beautifully, and you can tell that you have a very good relationship with your students. And how does being a music teacher allow you to connect with them on a deeper level than, say, a math teacher or an English teacher might?
I am so lucky because I'm the only choir director. So I have the students all 4 years that they're here at the school. So you can really get to know them well. You know, they come in as freshmen, and I get to hear them grow all the way through their senior year. And that is so neat to watch them start out maybe a little timid or just have the typical 14-year-old voice, and then to hear them and see them and watch them grow and then get to know them really closely. So I think that that's one of the unique characteristics of being a music educator or people in the fine and applied arts, because we don't have as many of us. And so, you know, it's just so neat that I can really get to know my kids more than just as a student. And so, and the other teachers also do that. They just don't have as much time as I do. So I'm really fortunate.
So the reason why we're here today is because you've been nominated as one of the Teachers of the Year in Illinois. Can you speak to what it feels like to be nominated?
It was very overwhelming because I was named from the district first and didn't even know I had been nominated. So just to know that my principal had nominated me, it meant a whole lot. And it's really humbling too, because especially when I was recognized at our opening district event, I saw all these other teachers and I was like, there are so many amazing teachers that I work with in my own music department and just all across the building and all across the district. And so it's been very humbling to have this given to me. And I just feel like it's a great opportunity for me to talk about how great Unit 5 is, how great Normal Community High School is, and all the teachers and the professionals that I work with. And so I really see it more as just being an ambassador for our district, and maybe if this turns out to win, that I can be an ambassador for teachers across the state. But it's I don't know, it's kind of weird, to be honest. It's just, it's exciting, it's humbling, it's overwhelming, and so I'm trying to enjoy it and not think too much about it.
Sitting in your classroom and watching you engage with your students, it's very easy to tell why somebody might think that you would be nominated for this. Did any of your students reach out to you? Do they know that you've been nominated? Have they said anything?
Part of the nomination process is a couple of them wrote letters for Mr. Chapman, our principal. And again, I had no idea what was even going on. And so that was really neat to know that they had done that for me and said some really nice things about me. So that was great. But I've been congratulated by students in my own classes and even other kids that just know who I am. I've said something to me in the hallway, so it's pretty neat.
We touched on a little bit earlier, but as a primary music teacher, what would you say is your teaching philosophy?
I believe in developing relationships with students is by far the most important thing. And then also within the classroom of having very high standards and just challenging the students to think beyond what they think they can do. And when you know them as well as I do, as they're developing over the 4 years, it's nice that I can usually have a sense of where their limits are and where I can keep pushing them. So that's been a really great part. I have asked my students in the past, just tell me who your favorite teacher is outside of choir. And almost without fail, it is never about the subject. It's always about the personality of the teacher and how much they care about the students. And so that is such an important part of this job, is that those students trust you and that you can work together And I think that a lot of people think that teaching is teacher in the front of the room and kids just sitting at their desk, but it really isn't like that at all. We're working with the kids. We know all their strengths and weaknesses. We have, and we tailor it as best we can in the classroom to the students that are in it. So it's really challenging, but it's so rewarding when you can see that light bulb go off or have one of those aha moments where, you know, something that's been really challenging for the class, and then they sing it, they get it right, and they're excited, and I'm excited, and I would take that any day over a concert performance, because that's when I get really excited about what I do.
You said that you listened to GLT. You might have seen a few weeks ago we did a teacher shortage series. Illinois is suffering from a lack of teachers in almost all areas. As someone who's a music teacher, what keeps you coming?
Oh, it's the kids, for sure. The students are just, they're the energy behind it all, and I just love seeing them every day. So it's always the students.
Illinois Teacher of the Year nominee and Unit 5 Choir Director Ben Lugenbuehl speaking with GLT's Mary Cullen. The State Board of Education will announce the 2019 Teacher of the Year during the Those Who Excel Banquet Saturday, October 20th at the Bloomington Normal Marriott. The Teacher of the Year will represent Illinois in the National Teacher of the Year program. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Kindred spirits seek solace and maybe something more one night at a bar in Philly. It's a place where everybody knows your name, but do they know what's in your heart? The new season at Heartland Theater kicks off with Stella and Lou, a play that navigates friendship, loneliness, and the passing of time. GLT correspondent Laura Kennedy has more.
It's not young love that's at the core of Stella and Lou. It's late-in-life relationships that take center stage. Sandra Zielinski is the director, and she reveals that the show is a romantic comedy that audiences will find relatable as the two main characters explore a second chance at love. Starring Linda Rettig, Dave Lemon, and Brett Catoni, Stella and Lou has yet one other co-star, a blue-collar neighborhood bar. For a play that gets real about relationships, the set has to be on point. And director Zielinski is very excited about the set design by Curtis Trout, which is so realistic, you can practically smell the Budweiser.
And the bar is located in South Philly. Hot, hot, hot outside. So as you see, we come to the door. It says Lou's Bar. You know you're in the right place. It has
where even, everyone knows your name?
Where everybody knows your name. Then we go through the bar door and welcome inside.
Oh, thank you.
So we have a bar. It's a small bar, but this is for, we have a pot of money for Riley. Riley is the one who just passed. So we have his little sign and jar. We have a bar that works.
It's, you mean a tap? What have you got on tap?
Well, we've got beer on tap.
Real back. Is this real beer?
It's real beer.
Really?
I'm telling you.
So we've got Shinerbach and Budweiser.
Yeah.
And some Busch.
And some Busch. So that's what they drink. Everybody in the cast. There's only three. So, but we pour from the Budweiser spout. And then, of course, up here we have all the bottles that you would ever want to drink from. Should I tell you?
Is that real Tito's vodka?
Should I really say?
Well,
I want you to guess. It's not real. So I can't get a gin and tonic when we're done.
Okay.
You know, and this is basically what this neighborhood would drink. High stuff is up there because rarely people ask.
People don't ask for Maker's Mark very often, so it's on the top shelf.
You got it. And then we've got all kinds of paraphernalia, sports paraphernalia.
And I notice right above the cash register, we have the very first dollar bill that was
absolutely
made at this bar.
Absolutely.
And you've got some really cool tables here. Let's go have a seat and talk more about the play, about Stella and Lou.
I felt when it was all said and done, I thought I would go to this bar. I would feel welcome at this bar. So that's what we want people to feel.
Well, why did you want to direct, Sandra, this play, Stella and Lou by Bruce Graham?
Well, the last show I did here in this same place was a musical.
Floyd Collins.
Floyd Collins, 18 people. And I said, you know what? I think I want something small. I think
this is just three people, so you went down a lot.
I went from 18 to 3. but it's a charming play. I mean, it's not one that you see violence in. Of course, you do see expletives in this play, but or you hear expletives, you don't see them. You know, it is a sweet play, and it's about these three people who have differing backgrounds. One, a young man who is going to get married, that's Donnie. And then you have a woman, Stella, who was married, divorced, and, you know, very little to say, good to say about being married. If we were supposed to be that close, we would have had a lot more Siamese twins, she says, in the play. And then we have the owner of the bar, Lou, who was married. He loved his wife dearly. She loved him, and she passed away. So it's the story of these three people who at one time, this night, meet in this bar, and then what ensues from their conversations and how they relate to each other and what they have to do at this night, this particular night. So it is about loneliness. It is about friendship. It is about not wanting to put yourself out there, feeling very comfortable, as Lou talks about, in this bar, because he has his bar, he has his home. He comes to the bar and he goes home. So there's nothing that challenges him to get out into the world. I think many people feel this way. They've had a love that was both not only their wife, but their friend, their lover, and that took up most of their time. And when that one person, whoever it is, whether it's the wife or the husband, dies, then you're left with this void and asking the question, who am I? What do I have to do?
Is this more about friendship rather than love, romantic love?
I don't think we get to the romantic love, you know, take me out right now. It isn't that, but it's companionship. It is trying to go out in the world, to go to a movie or go to a dance or go to dinner. And there's no expectation after that. But it's that first step, getting out of your comfort zone and realizing that you are lonely. Never having said it or said reasons why you do what you do, but in this play at this time, there are reasons that are talked about. And I think many people in the theater would relate to that. Whether you're young or old, we all make choices.
What insight does the play bring about life's last act?
I think the insight from this playwright is that you have a life to live and live it to its fullest. And whatever that means to you, that you can survive after a tragic, whether it's a death, whether it's an accident, whatever it is, that time goes on, and so should you. And that's difficult. That's difficult for some people to do, but I think that's his message.
A lot of interaction, personal interaction, is becoming more difficult due to technology. Now, is it addressed in the play that human interaction, that it's a skill that we're losing to the dominance of technology?
Absolutely. In fact, Stella says this. She's a nurse. She works in the ER. And she says, you know, I had to bawl out this one nurse because what was she doing? She was texting. And I found her in a closet texting and putting pictures up, and we had accidents and people who needed to be taken care of, and here she is. And then she makes the joke about our babies will be born with carpal tunnel disease, because that's what we do. And she talks about her son and who her son is with, and that they don't know how to talk to each other. And in fact, the young man, he's going to get married, you know, he's betwixt and between. Donnie has asked about, in effect, why is he marrying? Well, I don't want to call it off because then I'd lose all that money. And, you know, and we all.
Great idea.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, Stella was asked, well, what did she marry her husband for? She said, ooh, well, he had this cool car, you know. So it's questioning why we marry. And Donnie at the end comes up with a really good look at what marriage should be.
This is really a play that when people are going to see this, and a lot of this is going to resonate personally with people's everyday lives.
Absolutely. And the questions that we ask ourselves, the moments that we go through, because there's always that wave. You know, if you've had a loss in your life and there's a tick that there's either a smell or it's a sound or it's music that takes you back to a particular time, and there's that wave of sadness that comes over us, and then, of course, you go on. But we all have those moments. I believe we do. So I think we all have empathy toward being alone at a certain time or feeling sad at a certain time where memories flood back. So that is this play.
That's Sandra Zielinski, director of Stella and Lou, which is currently running at Heartland Theater in Normal through the 22nd. I'm Laura Kennedy.
Just a heads up, Stella and Lou is for mature audiences, mostly due to some rough language. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Ryan Denham, Mary Cullen, and Laura Kennedy. WGLT.org is also the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. Also look at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.